Hello, this is Adam Virgo, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 72 show. I'm Anthony Kendrick and I'm joined for this week's show by Richard Foster, who's a Guardian writer. Hi Rich, are you well?
Well, I'm not bad. As a Palace fan, I'm a little bit sore today, as you can imagine, but you know, I'm getting over it.
I was just going to ask a bit about yourself and Palace actually. How did you, you disappoint with the final, I presume? Do you think it was a fair result? Do you think you could have won it?
I think deep down, most Palace fans would say we weren't good enough and they just hadn't good too much for us. But when you score the first goal in the 79th minute, you just think this could be it. But they replied so quickly. And then obviously that Lingard shot was sort of out of the blue. Can't do a lot about it. And yeah, you lose an FA Cup final, it's not the worst thing in the world, is it?
Nah. Well, seeing Smalling getting sent off as well, that must have been a big lift, you know, thinking as well.
Yeah, just thing is, at the state of the game it was, you know, just in the first bit of extra time, just at the end of that first half, you've only got 15 minutes left. Palace are notorious for not actually taking advantage of our playing 10 men. I think we've probably done it about four times this season where we've either lost or drawn against 10 men. And so therefore, when a player gets sent off, we're not exactly over-celebrating. But I'd say, I don't know if it came across on television, but the fans were just incredible. And I don't know if any Man United fans are listening to this, but quite frankly, you were hardly at the game, as far as we were concerned. It was nearly all Palace.
I wasn't there myself. It was hard to tell. It's always hard to tell on the TV. It looked a fantastic atmosphere in that in general. It's always hard to tell, I find, on, you know, on the TV.
Yeah.
Just want to ask as well what you make of the season in general, because obviously it started off really well and then tailed off a bit in the second half.
Yes, I do the card. He's a bit of a streaky manager in that he either goes on a really good run or he goes on a really bad run. And clearly, up to Christmas, we were on a good run. We were fit. And we were looking good, and then suddenly after Christmas it all fell apart in terms of the league, and we only won, you know, a couple more games the whole of the rest of the remainder of the season. Mitigating setbacks, we did lose a couple of players through injury. Bellassi got injured, Wickham was almost permanently injured. And then a few others went other ways. So we didn't have either consistent selection or we didn't have a lot of best players playing. But it's still a bit worrying to, you know, only win two of the last 20, I think it was. So, you know what it's like. You want to go into the following season with a bit of momentum. And at the moment, without that cup run, and that's basically, it's a bit weird since we've been four Premier League sides along the way and not, you know, not shabby sides, like Southampton away, Tottenham away, Stoke at home, and then obviously Watford in the semi. It's just strange to be saying, well, we beat four Premier League sides in the FA Cup, but we didn't manage more than two win the Premier League in 20 matches. But let's hope we can turn our cup form into our league form or whatever magic Hardy's got up his sleeve.
Hopefully it'll be a better season next season. I just want to ask a bit about yourself as well. I know you write for The Guardian currently. How was it, when was it you decided you wanted to go into journalism as a career?
It's very late on in my life. I'm a slightly crusty old chap, but unlike your own virile listener, I was in the media for a while, so I worked actually at the Financial Times for 13 years, but that was on the commercial side, so advertising, marketing, that sort of thing. I got made redundant in 2006 out of the blue. I think it was fancy writing, so I did a bit of freelance. Actually, it wasn't football stuff. I was writing about, strange enough, about wine, which I didn't know that great thing about. But I knew someone who was looking for someone who was doing some freelance, so I got involved with that. Then took a job, which I didn't really enjoy. Got back in the commercial side because I wasn't making enough money to freelance. And in the end, I just thought, well, And very fortunately, my wife just starts her own business, sort of French language businesses, start to take off. And that took the pressure off me earning money. So I was allowed to make some freelance stuff. And as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know who are journalists. You know, it's a tough start. You do a lot of work for very little, if not nothing. And my advice is stick with it. Keep writing, always write. Don't necessarily write. Keep writing for nothing, because there's nothing more dispiriting than writing some really good stuff and not being paid for it. You can do it now and again, but I wouldn't encourage people to do it too much. And I think just the world of journalism is very different now, that basically you can get published, which is a positive, but the lack of remuneration is a real problem. And I would always suggest people get quite picky about that. And okay, to start with, don't get sucked into doing work for nothing, because that is the road to hell, as we know. So there are plenty of opportunities out there, and I think, as most journalists would say, you almost have to become sardonic in me, because that's what I wanted to get away from, being a salesperson. And I now have to sell myself the whole time. So I'd say it's sort of gone full circle, really, but at least I'm selling myself. Which, you sort of know enough about yourself. And, confidence is a key issue here. You've got to have the confidence in your own work. And I also always recommend people do really rigorous research. Even if they're doing just a small piece, get your research right. Because the worst thing you can do is produce an article that's got factual inaccuracies in it, and exact, and just rip it apart, and your reputation can get torn to shreds. So make sure you do your research, make sure you know your subject, and then you should be on the right path.
Okay. Was it something you always wanted to get into in the end? Because you say you did a few other jobs before going to football and that.
Yeah. I've always done a bit of writing on the side, not commercially, just enjoyed writing. And my dad was a journalist, my brother was a journalist. So it was in the veins, but my dad had told me, don't become a journalist, it's not worth it, too much work, not enough pay. And I stupidly went to the commercial side, which is, gives you a comfortable lifestyle, but doesn't get you out of bed in the morning. It's brilliant. I'm now going to go in and sell some advertising or arrange a marketing plan of it. So deep down, I think, if I look back on my career, I should have stuck with the idea of writing early on. But it's never too late. Never too late.
All right. Just want to mention, you've got a book out, The Agony and Ecstasy, A History of Playoffs.
Yeah.
So, do you want to tell us a bit about what that's about?
Yeah, so it struck me, it's exactly going back to when I was made redundant out of Financial Times for 2006, when I started doing some writing. But I also thought, well, I need a bigger project than just churning out pieces freelance. So I've been thinking, I've always been a massive football fan, always love football. I just thought, is there a subject that I can really get my teeth into? And again, it's important that no one else has covered it. And I had been involved in the playoffs as a fan with Palace quite a few times. And it suddenly struck me, I thought, well, I've never actually read anything about the playoffs in terms of a book. And you obviously do your research, you look around, and there was nothing at all. So that was the germ of the idea of 2006, but it took a while. I did a bit of research, but then, as I say, I got involved in other jobs, so I couldn't really do it. But it was always there, and I sort of developed the idea. I think, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, you really have to do the research. You have to love that subject to the nth degree, because you've got to dig really deep, find the interesting stories, get a bit of depth in it, as well as breadth. Let's face it, we're now in the 29th year of the playoffs, so 30th anniversary next year. I still find it remarkable that no one thought, oh, we should maybe do a history of this. And in the end, I wrote a book called The Age of the Football Hate a couple of years ago. That was my first book. And then I was, I'd already had the playoffs in the back of my mind. And I approached another publisher, because the people who did The Age of the Football Hate fine, but they're not really football specialists. But I found Oakley, who are football, they're a proper football publisher. They know their business inside out. They also love football. And they were really supportive and really good people to work with. It's important, because writing a book is a very lonely experience because you're just sitting here writing on your own and you don't get a great deal of response, you don't get feedback, you can't chat about it particularly because you're the only person who's doing it. You must find a publisher who is going to engage with you and help you along the process because it's a tough old, very rewarding, but tough. So I'd actually been given a really good bit of advice by someone who's in publishing when I was considering writing a book and said, what you need to consider when you're writing, particularly obviously non-fiction as this is that you've got to find 100 nuggets. So 100 stories that would stand up on their own. And if you've got 100 nuggets in your book, then there's probably a decent book in there. If you're struggling to find 50 or 60, you probably haven't got a strong enough idea, or you've got to look at it in a different way. So I'd advise anyone who's embarking on writing a book, bear that in mind. Think about the 100 nuggets. Think about your stories. Are they going to stand up? Can you connect them? And obviously, the narrative is important, but you've got to have those key moments, key stories that are engaging and will captivate people before you even start. I mean, there's a long planning process writing a book, and you should really spend a lot of time in the planning process because preparation is key.
How much input would you say the publishers had on the book? Is it like, I'm just wondering if it's a process where you do it all yourself or whether, you know, publishers say, oh, you should do this or that or the other?
Well, no, that's the good thing about Dave Hartshorne. What he did was he liked the book, but we basically agreed to slightly restructure it. That was more to do with which chapters came where and how we were going to approach it. So he gave me some really good advice about how we should do it, and it shouldn't just be straight chronology, so you don't just go from, playoff starts in 87 and then went to 88, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It ducks around a bit. So, you know, it does obviously start with why the playoffs were introduced, but it also then looks at themes as well as chronological sequence. And that is really helpful because it gives you a fresh way of looking at it and you can accentuate certain elements of it that you may not do if you just stuck with a strictly chronological order.
Yeah. Okay, I guess a big question about the playoffs at the moment, I guess, do you think that they're fair? Do you think we should have playoffs?
Two-part question. I don't think they're particularly fair because, there is the argument that if you finish third, let's say, it's quite a weird year this year. If you think about the teams that finished third, third and fourth in the Championship, League One, League Two, they've all been knocked out in the semi-final.
Mm-hmm.
So Brighton, Walsall, Accrington Stanley, and it hurts even more because you consider both of all those clubs, all three of them, were so close to actually getting automatically promoted. And if you remember Brighton went into that final game of the season against Middlesbrough with the potential if they won, they were going to go straight up, dropped out, lost to Sheffield Wednesday. Walsall were picked just at the last moment by Burton, and obviously being knocked out by Barnsley. And then Accrington Stanley lost to, wasn't it, the added time, Bristol Rovers scored a goal that took them out of promotion slot. So all three of those teams had been within, 5 minutes a goal of going up automatically, and all of them now out, back in the division. And, it's a tough road. And I was doing some, actually, when I sort of thought, well, I can't remember this happening, and I've already gone back as far as 2001, it's never happened before that all three of the highest placed playoff clubs have been knocked out in the semi-finals. It is a bit unfair, but in a way, football is unfair, isn't it? It's not a level playing field. Things can turn against you, and life's not perfect. I think they're a fantastic addition to football. I think. They are the pinnacle of the Football League season. Whatever you think about the justice of Sheffield Wednesday being 15 points behind Brighton, they do provide fantastic games and have consistently over 29 years. There are very few years where it's not been particularly exciting and it's never really turned around. Every year has something going on which, captivates the audience. And the point I make in the book, the great thing about the playoffs is it's pretty much all football fans looking at the playoffs and going, oh, it's pretty good. You know, Premier League's over, FA Cup is usually over. So the playoffs become the focus of, you know, domestic football, which I think is good because you probably agree with me that there's a bit too much focus on the Premier League sometimes. It's not the be-all and end-all. There is life in the Football League and there is some captivating, fantastic, enthralling action nearly every year in the playoffs, which just highlights what goes on in the Football League.
No, I completely agree. Well, it's the reason for this show, I suppose. Why? Because so much Football League action gets overlooked in favour of the Premier League. But, I mean, with the playoffs, the viewing figures are always, you know, they're always really high. And there's always this massive, as you say, this massive following of the playoffs with the Premier League season over. It's incredible. And I guess from a financial point of view, there's no way the playoffs, they're here to stay, you know. There's no way they can get rid of them.
Yeah, it's interesting though that when they were first introduced, there wasn't really any consideration of the, you know, the financial value because it was way back in the 80s, mid-80s, and they were actually introduced to reduce the old first division because it was 22 clubs and they wanted to reduce it to 20. So it was a way of basically paring down the 22 clubs, and they did it over 2 years. So there was a relegation slot. Mm-hmm. In the first 2 years, Charlton avoided in 87 from Division 1 to Division 2. Chelsea dropped through it, actually. So Chelsea, the only team to be relegated from the top division by the playoffs, which, you don't see that mentioned very often. But and obviously, the lower leagues as well, there were teams, Wolves, for example, in the first year, who were still a big club. Lost to all the shot in the final, and it was a shock because the first leg all shot recreation around 5,000 people, the second one that volumed 20,000 people, but all the shot still came out on top. And just that sort of thing just happens so often in the playoffs, and that's why we love them.
Good pub quiz question answer to know.
Yeah, I've got one. If you need quiz questions, I've got loads of them at back here, so just let me know and I'll bring them to you.
All right. Something you've sort of touched on it actually. There's been some talk about the Football League potentially increasing to 80 teams, so there'd be a top 100 teams in England. I just wonder what you make of them proposals. You know, to have the four leagues with 80 teams.
It's only just come out. Obviously, I sort of understand the logic in that, you know, there are teams in the conference. There are big teams in the conference. You get good games. And so, if you're going to add another 18, then there'll be decent teams coming up. I understand also the argument against is that, particularly in League 2 and League 1, possibly, the teams need that revenue from those 23 games, don't they? I mean, to cut it down to 20 or to 19 even. The thing is that for the lower leagues, attendance money is important. Television money, just disappeared basically, okay? So you still get it, but there's nothing compared to what you're getting in the Premier League. And most Premier League clubs are, so dependent on TV income, whereas the lower you go, the more you're dependent on commercial income, matched income. So there are counter arguments for it. I'd like to think about it a bit more. It's fairly fresh as an idea. I don't think there's any harm in proposing it. I think it's probably not exactly the most forward-thinking organisation in the world, but at least they're coming up with a new idea and it's worth discussing. I'd be totally against big teams or bigger clubs being involved. I think that would be an absolute nonsense. But if it was, to promote eight teams out of the conference who are currently there, then I think it might work.
Something we've spoke about on this podcast a few times is the fact that only two teams go up from the conference, so you have to win the conference in order to get promoted to the Football League. I don't know if that's something you agree with or...
Yeah, I know. In the old days, you had the ridiculous system of re-election. So you had a system where in the old Division 4 was League 2 as it is now. Mm-hmm. If you finished at the bottom, or I think it could have even been two teams at the bottom, it was then up to an existing clubs to decide whether you got relegated. Can you imagine that?
Right.
So basically, teams were voting for their mates, basically. So it's like, would a turkey vote for Christmas? Probably not. So there was this mad system where you were up for re-election. Generally, teams were re-elected because, you know, they just had a quiet word in the corridor, said, oh, you could be here next season, and I'll vote for you to stay up. And, you know, they did introduce automatic promotion from the conference, which is a good thing. And then I think it was originally just one place, and now it's two. Should it be expanded to three? I don't see why not. I mean, it's having two automatic and then the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs have obviously been part of non-league football as well. So it's, you know, you look at AFC Wimbledon, they came up to the league via the conference playoffs and maybe Luton. So yeah, I don't see it's a big problem because I think a lot of these conference clubs are ready. Basically, you know, they've got good grounds. They've got a lot of clubs who are in the league who are down there now. So you've got good, really good gates. I don't think they're doing any help.
Okay, it does seem a strange thing that you've got, you know, two teams coming out of the of League Two, and then you've got four and three teams coming out of the other two divisions. It seems a you know an odd way for the Football League to be structured.
Yeah, maybe it should be three down, three up. It's maybe a way to go.
It sounds the logical thing to do.
Yeah.
I just want to move on to the actual playoff finals and review what's actually happened this year. So Hull obviously, Hull beat Derby 3-2 over two legs. It was a 3-0 win in the first leg, which really set them on their way. And it was Derby won the second leg 2-0, got back into it. But in the end, Hull, that first game, they were just too strong for Derby because of the first game.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite weird, wasn't it? I remember watching the first leg. The Derby looked all right, I thought, in the first 20 minutes. They looked like they were playing reasonably well. They looked quite composed. And then suddenly, as soon as Hull scored that goal, it all seemed to disintegrate really quickly. And then, you know, Hull deserved to win. Maybe not 3-0, but certainly 2-0. And then it completely reversed in the second leg. And I thought Derby, you know, it was good. They got that early goal. They got another one for half-time. But it just didn't quite get over the line. They just didn't look like they were absolutely convinced they were going to get it back. And it was fascinating because, you know, you watched both of those championship playoffs and they seemed to be over from the first leg. But then the Brighton Sheffield Wednesday game, there was, you know, a time when Brighton were actually battering Wednesday in the first half in the second leg and thought, they're going to get this back, aren't they? So, you know, I personally, I thought Hull looked really pretty weak on, you know, in that second leg. I thought Derby exposed them, and if they just had a bit more belief, they could have gone on to do it. But it just seemed to peter out a bit in the second half, didn't it? And it just didn't look like it was going to happen.
The thing with Derby, though, it's been the last three seasons where there was the loss to QPR last season. They bottled it and left the playoffs. And then this season, there's this. It's been three seasons. I think it's pretty concerning, you know, for them.
Do you, I mean, I know you're a Derby fan. Therefore, were you worried about the playoffs? Do you think, oh, God, not the playoffs again. I don't really want to go through this.
To be honest.
Are you sort of fatalistic about it?
To be honest, it was, I think, for quite a while, it was pretty clear that it was playoffs that we were going to get. And I had no belief going into the playoffs that we would get any results, to be honest, that we would win the playoffs. So to me, I wasn't bothered really because I just didn't have any belief in the side.
Yeah, I must say that I actually went to the Derby QPR final in 2014, one of the most one-sided games.
Yeah, I was there myself.
How QPR won that game it defies logic. And I know, you know, that Zamora struck in the last minute, but Derby actually battered QPR, really. And I just couldn't see any other winner, and particularly after O'Neill got sent off. And you did look like a team who was with about a 10-man opposition, but just ridiculous. And it must have been a horrible, horrible feeling at the end there.
Yeah.
So you got the agony bit.
I just remember the sea of flag, the QPR flags. I just remember the sea of them at the end. That's all I can remember, to be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting because I I've always said this about the playoffs, that everyone, you know, as soon as you lose, you're out of there within 5 minutes. And actually, the great picture on the back of the book of it's actually the Derby QPR match about 5 minutes after the final whistle, where half the stadium's absolutely packed, and obviously the players are cavorting on the pitch, the other half empty. And that's not a Photoshop, I can tell you. It was definitely taken by a Football League official, so it couldn't get more, yeah, you know, bona fide. It will, you know. I remember losing to Leicester in 96, which was the first agony that I experienced in the playoffs. And it was a 120th minute shinner from good old Steve Parish. Terrible, awful, awful feeling. You just don't want to hang around, you don't want to watch, you're out of there. For the FA Cup final, I stuck around a bit the other day because I wanted to applaud the players. And, you know, it's an FA Cup final, it's not a playoffs final. The playoffs final got so much more riding on it in terms of the future of your club. You know, you're either back in that division again, which, let's face it, each of those divisions is a slog.
Mm.
It's a hard, hard league to get out of wherever you are, 46 matches. And there are always, you know, some decent sides around, and there are always clubs that are then to upset other clubs. And, you know, those fine lines are just, yeah, just, as we said earlier, it's cruel, it's unfair, but hey, it's the playoffs.
I think with the playoffs as well, compared to, say, an FA Cup final, is both teams go into that game believing they can win. There's not always a 50-50 chance, but both teams got a reasonable chance. Say with this playoff final, FA Cup final, for instance, you know, Everyone goes in expecting United to win. I guess with the playoff final, so Sheffield Wednesday, Hull, you can't, you know, it's not a unanimous opinion like it is.
No, you're right, it's not a clear cut, is it? Because generally, well, obviously, the teams are pretty close together, not necessarily in points, but in places. So, you know, they have. It was interesting that Derby had beaten Hull and they twice in the league season. But then lost at home in that first leg, and they obviously beat them away in the second. So, there is the disparity. And you're right, I mean, I think most people, neutrals looking at AFA Cup finals, say, well, United are going to win that. They're not a great United team, and there's obviously been issues with managers now left. But you sort of know that Man United have got a stronger team, stronger squad than Palace, and, you know, got more of a history, blah, 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 blah. You don't get that so much in the playoffs because they're well-mapped sides. You know, they've got, obviously, they've played each other twice before, but There's never, you know, a really clear favourite. I mean, I thought last year Middlesbrough would definitely go through, and Norwich would turn up after 15 minutes, and that was it. So, yeah, it's never as clear cut as it might be in other competitions.
Yeah, I guess just going back as well to the mentality thing for Brighton, not getting automatic promotion, you know, losing out to Middlesbrough, that could have been a big factor in, as well as the four injuries in the first game. I guess the mentality, though, I think is a massive factor in that team.
Well, my publisher, Dave Hartring, he is a Brighton fan, and he, I spoke to him about it before, he said, we're not going to get through. He said, we're running on empty. They have a bit of a hoodoo with Sheffield Wednesday. I don't know, they've won at Hillsborough for many, many, many years. And he said, we're just not going to do it. Because he said, you know, they were so deflated after, you know, they got 89 points. I mean, there's a ridiculous number of points. I think it was the second highest number of points without getting the automatic promoted ever. And it's just soul destroying to be that close and then have it taken away. And then you've got to face the playoffs, which are, you know, they're harsh. They're unforgiving. But they say, oh, well, you got close, therefore you're going to get through. No way. Not going to happen, Craig.
How do you see the final this Saturday going, the whole Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really, it's an interesting match because I always look at the managers. I think managers are really key in this because you've got to be calm, you've got to be in control. And you've got Steve Bruce, who's already got a team out through the playoffs a while ago, Burnley in 2002. But he's, yeah, we all know Steve Bruce, don't we? He's a wily old character, and he almost got Hull up a couple of years ago for automatic promotion. You switch to the other side, you've got Carlos Carvajal, who, you know, it's in his first season in English record. He hadn't had a job for about 3 years. He'd been obviously Portuguese. He'd been managing in Portugal quite a few clubs, and then he ended up in Turkey managing one of the lower Istanbul clubs. And then he left in 2002. So he was out of work for 3 years. Suddenly he turned up at Sheffield Wednesday. I didn't think they had that much expectation because they've been out of the Premier League for 16 years, and I don't think many Wednesday fans have thought, oh yeah, this is our year. But he certainly turned them around, and I think they're really a good side because they've got some good attacking players. I think Forestier is a good player. I know Bannon quite well because he was obviously at Palace for a bit. I think he's a great player at Championship level. I would say Wednesday have got the better team, but Hull have got the more experienced manager. Now, whether that makes a difference, we will find out on Saturday. But it's I think it's bound to be pretty close. It's bound to be close. I think I said earlier to my publisher in a thing with me that I think it's going to be Wednesday personally. But I'm notoriously bad at predicting, by the way, so don't go to bookings on my recommendations because I'm pretty awful at predicting who's going to win these things.
I know our followers are pretty bad at predicting as well because, only 10% of them actually said that Sheffield Wednesday could win the playoffs. And, look where we are now.
But Sheffield Wednesday, I will point out, they're the only team in this year's playoffs who got a 100% record in the playoffs. They've only been in it once, fair enough, but they did win it in 2005. And the thing is, that really sticks in the craw of Sheffield United fans, because Sheffield United had got the worst record of any team in the playoffs. They've been in it 8 times, they still haven't got promoted, they've been through to 4 finals, and they still yet to score a goal in a final, which is, that's pretty poor. Sheffield Wednesday, their only time in the final, they scored 4, one in each half. First half, second half, first half, extra time, second half, extra time. That is called rubbing it, your face in it, isn't it? Yeah. That your biggest rivals, your city rivals, have done it once and they've absolutely nailed it, whereas we've tried 8 times and we still haven't won. So, poor old Blades.
That's a great start. That's good knowledge there. my predictions for a tight Hull win, but it's difficult to predict either way. We'll move on to League One. Barnsley absolutely battered Walsall 6-1 in their game, 3-1 and 3-0 wins.
It was a real surprise, wasn't it? Because Walsall were considered to be a really good team, weren't they? It's interesting because Barnsley came from nowhere. I mean, they were actually in the relegation zone halfway through at the 23rd, after 23 games, they were in the relegation zone. They also got rid of their manager, Neville Johnson, moved on.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul Heckenbottom came in, didn't he, in about, was it February time? So he's only caretaker. But what a great job he's done in keeping that side together. And I watched a little bit of, obviously the second leg, because it was all over, but I watched the first leg. And they were impressive. I must admit, I don't see too much League One football, but they look really good. They look strong. They look like they, had a great self-belief. I can see Barnsley, giving a very good account of themselves against Millwall, although I've got to say, I think Millwall are the stronger team. Okay. I think they're very solid. They've got 2 goal scorers in Gregory and Morrison, who are, they're experienced practitioners, but they will slot it in if you need it to. And as far as I can see, it was actually interesting because I was looking at the fact that both of those managers, so you've got Nick Paris for Millwall and Heckenbottom for Barnsley, both have played for those clubs, so Heckenbottom for Barnsley and Millhouse for Millwall, in playoff finals. So Heckenbottom played when Barnsley overcame Swansea in 2006, and Millhouse played in 2009 when Millwall lost to Scunthorpe, and then again 2010 when they beat Swindon. So they've both got experience players, but I don't think either of them have ever managed a team in the playoffs. So it's an interesting little conundrum there.
It's still an amazing thing that the Heckenbottom at Barnsley is still just a caretaker manager. He's not
Yeah, I know. I mean, you'd have thought he's done a pretty incredible job. I think that I saw that out of the 21 games he's been in charge, they've won lost three. I mean, most managers would be getting a new contract out of that, wouldn't they? You know, he's proved himself, hasn't he? He got them into the playoffs. You know, they battered one of the best sides in Division 6-1 over two legs. I personally, if I was the chairman, I'd try them out.
I think, well, I guess presumably they don't want it to be a distraction. I'd be amazed if he wasn't offered a contract, I guess. It might be better for the club just to wait till the end, wait till it's all over.
But this is football in 2016, Anthony. You can win the FA Cup and get sacked, you did, like, so who knows what's going to happen.
It Barnsley, though, I'm going to predict them to win the final against Millwall. I think going forward, they're amazing to watch. They've scored so many goals. And, Millwall are a good side, for me, I'm backing Barnsley.
OK, well, we're opposed to each other in every prediction so far. So, shall we move on to League 2?
Yeah, we'll look at League 2 then. It was Plymouth-Portsmouth where all the drama was, I suppose. Well, both games were full of drama, I guess, but 2-2 the first leg, and then Peter Hartley got that late winner for Plymouth to send them to the final.
Yeah, I mean, I did see the end of that Plymouth-Portsmouth game. Again, you've got to feel sorry for Portsmouth, haven't you? What have they been through in the last, since they won the FA Cup all those years ago, and their slid down divisions, gone into administration a couple of times, and obviously being rescued, and they're now a fan-owned club. But boy, that must have really hurt. But Plymouth, good on Plymouth. I think I read that they're going to take 33,000 odd to Wembley, which is a pretty good effort. There's going to be over 50,000 there, and that's the thing. The game I love about the playoffs is that you've got a four-tier game. And you're going to have 50,000 people there. That wouldn't happen in any other country.
No.
That's even more than chance. And in fact, the largest crowd in 40 was Bristol Rovers Shrewsbury. In 2007, it was 60,000 people. It's just remarkable that English football, again, at this level, has got, has really got, that there is a lot of support there. For the right time, the right moment, there are a lot. I still find it amazing the crowds that we get in, all three lower divisions are still pretty impressive. And as you probably know, the Championship is the fourth most watched league in the world.
I was just going to say that, it's incredible.
It's quite extraordinary that, more people watch Championship football than Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. So back to Plymouth. Derek Adams, he's quite a young manager as well. Being charged for that, absolutely. But I saw the AFC Wimbledon second leg. I saw a bit of the first leg, but another late winner wasn't there in the first leg, and then that ridiculous game.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Accrington looked like we were going to run over them 2-0 out, and then they got back to 2-1, and the lights go out. That was just that was amateur hour, wasn't it? I thought they looked really composed and finally scored the goal. Is it Lyle? I thought he looked really, really good, quite lively. And you also got Akinfenwa, of course, who we all know and love. but I've got to say, I can't see past the Plymouth victory here. You're probably going to tell me that you're backing AFC Wimbledon now.
No, I agree with you. I think Plymouth, I think they've recovered well because earlier in the season they were competing possibly with Northampton before Northampton went on that great run.
Yeah, because they've been thereabouts, haven't they, all season.
Yeah.
They've been quite strong and then fell away a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, I think, but no, I do. I expect Plymouth to win it, and unfortunately Wimbledon won't get the chance to be in the same division as Milton Keynes next season.
Yes, no, that is a nice subplot, isn't it? That would be quite a nice moment if it happened. Well, knowing our predictions, actually, we're almost nailed on them, as well.
We'll have to wait and see. So, it's your chance as listeners to this to get involved. If you can predict the three winners better than us, well, or we might be right, one of us might be right. You can get involved and win a copy of The Agony and Ecstasy, A History of Playoffs. You need to predict the three winners of each of the finals. So for me, it would be Hull, Barnsley and Plymouth. So you include all three must be included in your prediction to win. And I will pick a random winner out of all the correct entries we receive. You can also enter on the forum. I'll put details on the forum how you can enter there. Or it's hashtag V2Playoffs, or you can send me a direct message to predict the three winners of the three playoff games to win the Agony and Ecstasy.
I'd be very interested to know how many people get all three right.
I'll reveal the winner on our final show next week. I'll drop you a message, let you know the winner, and I'll let you know the statistics on it because it's, yeah, I'll be interested to see that myself.
I'm going to all three finals as I did last year, so I'll be in the press box. I really look forward to this weekend because it's just, particularly as a Palace fan, I don't particularly be involved. So nerves shredding, but I just love watching, and as a neutral, there's nothing better than sometimes, when your own season's over, you just want to watch some football that is raw and is, going to be dramatic, then it's nothing better than the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's fantastic. So you can catch Sheffield Wednesday, Hull on Saturday, Barnsley, Millwall on Sunday, and Wimbledon, Plymouth this bank holiday Monday. I think we've reached the end of the show. Unless there's anything else you want to mention.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I hope Derby next season go up automatically, or even maybe get into playoffs.
Again. I don't want playoffs again.
You have done one football. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Under good old Billy Davis. But the next season didn't go so well, did it? But it's been an absolute pleasure. Always love talking about the playoffs. Always love talking about football. So thank you very much for inviting me on.
It's been great having you on the show. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at V2Football. You can also follow Richard Foster. It's at RC Foster. Also check out our Facebook and YouTube pages. We'll be back for our final show next week. And also we will be announcing the competition winner then. Thanks for listening. It's good night from me and good night from my guest tonight, Richard Foster.
Good night.